Boker Tov, world. Today's daf in Masechet Chulin, brought to you from Yerushalayim Yir HaKodesh, is daf Chof Vav. We're holding a Chof Hey Amud Beit at the Halakha Mishnah. So as we mentioned yesterday, we're going to be moving on now from a list of things that the Perek ended with, which set two different things up against each other and showed them to be mirror images of each other, like Kohanim and Levim in certain ways, or like the Yegla Rufa, the Pora Aduma, or the Yitorim, or the Vinei Yonah. Now we're moving on to an entirely different thing, but it's very similar in the sense that we're going to be examining the same thing at different stages of its development. And so it has certain dinim at one stage, and opposite dinim on the next stage. So it's very similar to the Mishnayos that we've had until now, that started with the comparison of Shechita to Melika, and now has led us far afield. So let's talk about the dinim of Temet today. So Temet basically is you soak, I've pointed out many times, this was the standard Badatz wine, not so long, well, it has become a little longer ago, maybe about 50, 60 years ago. And the way that they used to make wine is they didn't have actual grapes. What they would do is they would buy the lees and the seeds, you know, whatever else settled down after the good wine, which wasn't kosher enough, which was the Carmel wine, which was the only wine at the time in the country. And so they would buy the lees, and then they would soak it in water. And then gradually that water would ferment because it absorbed whatever actual wine was left in those lees. And that would be the wine that was sold as the kosher wine. Anyway, but basically, oh, they would have to add, of course, what they called kal, which was the alcohol, which they derived from other sources. So anyway, that was the best you could do once upon a time. Now, Baruch Hashem, Eretz Yisrael is among the great competitors for the best wines in the world, all in the space of a mere half a century. So now this Temed, initially, obviously, it hasn't fermented. It takes time till it ferments. Initially, you put in water and you wait and hope for the best. So HaTemed Ad Shelo Yachamitz Eino Nikach B'Kesev Ma'aser. Remember that in order to use the money from your Ma'aser Sheni, and bring it to Yerushalayim, and to be able to eat there, like it says in the pasuk, "Yirbeh mimcha derech ki lo tuchal seito ki rechak mimcha makom," etc. So it says, "V'natata b'kesev, v'tzarta kesev b'yadecha," and you take it up to Yerushalayim, and then "V'natata kesev b'chol asher ta'aveh nafshecha." What can you buy with that money? You can buy bokor, tzon, yayin, shechar, and so on. But you can't buy water with it, that's for sure. It has to be something that matches this list. So it has to be something that is considered to be gedule karka and that reproduces. And therefore, water, if the temet wasn't yet fermented, it's just water. And therefore, you cannot buy it with kesem meiser. And remember that there's a special halacha that mayim she'uvim, but only mayim she'uvim, only mayim that falls into a mikveh that is chaser, as long as that mikveh is chaser, even a little bit, then if you've got shlosha lugin of mayim she'uvim that fall into that mikveh is ruined and doesn't help to keep adding kosher mikveh water to it. That then is only said about water, but not about wine. So we got shlosha lugin of yayin that falls into a mikveh. It's not going to pass. Remember, it falls into a mikveh that is chasera, and it's missing a kortav, it's missing a tiny bit. So now, if the temed is just water, and it's obviously mayim shuvim, it's been sitting there in that tank with all that stuff, then if it falls into a mikveh that was chasera, it passes that mikveh permanently. Once it turns into wine, meaning it starts to ferment, now it's wine, and you can buy it in Yerushalayim with your kesef meiser to eat, as it said beferish in the pasuk, b'yayin u'b'shechar. If it falls into a mikveh, since it's not mayim, it's only yayin, it will not pasul the mikveh, I mean, we did have cases we're going to be talking about later where a change in coloration of the mikvah might pasul a mikvah, but certainly there's no psul over year of mayim she'uvin. So that would be one item, temed, which has one din before its ichmitz, and one din after its ichmitz, and that sets the tone for all of the different things that we're going to be learning here till the end of the parak. So, let's take a case of brothers. And these brothers inherit their father's estate. And now the first part of their, shall we say, partnership is a partnership in the father's estate. It's not really a partnership because for many dinim, it's considered to be a continuation of the estate. If they break up the estate and they do an actual chaluka of the estate, then even if they make themselves partners again, they're only partners. And partners are different than partners in an estate that they inherited. So let's take a look at those differences. Achim ha-shutafim. These are brothers who are partners, but they're still partners in the estate. Now, the estate is called tfusat habayit. It's what is still in the hands of, literally, the estate, the bayit. So if they're partners through being brothers in an estate, if they are chayef to pay the kalabon, then they are potter from Eiser Behima. So the din is that if they have actually split, if regular partners come together and they want to pay a single shekel for the two partners, then they have to pay the kalabon. The kalabon is a surcharge for changing the shekel into a machzis ha-shekel, and it's part of what it is that Hegdash takes for accepting your machzis ha-shekel. Now, if these are bank charges, if you want to get away without paying the bank charges to the Hegdash bank, you know all about those terrible Pharisees. They'll never let you off of a bank charge in a million years. And therefore, if you try to get around by getting together and say, listen, let's avoid the surcharge and we'll just put a shekel together and we'll give it to the bank, you're both going to have to pay the surcharge. It won't get you anywhere. Now, there's a completely different approach. There's actually machlokas exactly what the siba is for paying the kalabon. But the other approach is that we don't rely on the machzis ha-shekel coin to be complete. And therefore, if you end up paying less than your chiva machzis ha-shekel, you won't be yotze. The kalabon, which is a tiny additional charge, if your shekel was run down a little bit, so then you're going to pay that kalabon and it will make up for whatever was missing in your machzis ha-shekel. But anyway, so the halacha is like this. If the tfusat habayit, if a father is paying for his children, for that matter, if somebody wants to pay for a poor man who can't afford to pay a machzis ha-shekel. So in that case, there is no surcharge and there is no kalabon to pay if you pay an entire shekel for two people. And it's a gift entirely from the tfusat habayit here. And as long as the brothers are potter from that kalabon, then they are still being paid for by the estate. But if they're being paid for by the estate, then they are considered to be one legal corporation. And therefore, that legality, that entity, which is the two of them, known as the tfusat habayit, has to bring regular maaser behema. Masha Enkin, when people make a partnership, a real partnership is potter from Maaser Behema, because it's not owned by any particular person, and it says Ye Lach, Lach Valosho Shutafut. And therefore, whatever is considered to be a legal partnership is going to be potter from Maaser Behema, but will be Chayev and Kalabon. Whatever looks like a partnership, but is actually an estate, is going to be chayev in Maaser Behema, but will be potter mikalabon. So that means, depending on what stage of the relationship of the two heirs, it depends. If they are actually shutafim and they had broken up the estate, then if they're chayev in the kalabon because they're no longer an estate, then they're real partners, and then they're potter from Maaser Behema. But if they're chayiv in Maaser Behemah, that means that they're viewed as legally one entity, which is called the Tefusat HaBayit. And therefore, they are peturim min hakalabon, because it's really only one shekel that's being paid out of the estate. So now let's take a look back at the first part of the Mishnah and think about the temet. So we've got a number of things to think about. We pour water into this temet, and we can see how much liquid we've got in the mixture. Now, remember that because of the different levels of various chemicals that are going to be between the water and between what's been absorbed in these lees, you may be encouraging the lees to put out, by putting in the water, by changing the hydrostatic pressure, you can push water out of the lees. And so it looks to you like you have more moisture than when you started with, more liquid than when you started with. That doesn't necessarily happen, obviously, because it depends on the amount of actual liquid that was absorbed by those lees. So one issue that you have to take into consideration is the transference of water into the wine content and the wine, you know, being put out into the water. That's one thing you have to take a look at. The other thing you have to take a look at is, does this taste like wine? Does it look like wine? The other thing you have to look at is, has it fermented or not? Now, not necessarily do all three of those factors make a difference. And because of that, the Gemara is trying to figure out who would our Mishnah be going according to, because the Mishnah seems to take into consideration only one of those elements, namely, has it fermented or has it not fermented, right? Well, who is the Tana that holds that? That the only situation that you need to worry about in defining whether temed, which is that mixture, that temed is considered to be wine or water, which is what our Mishnah says. Before it fermented, it'll pasul a mikveh like mayim she'uvin. Before it fermented, it's just plain water. You cannot buy it with ma'aser sheni money. As far as we know, nobody holds that. Lo Rebbe Yehuda, v'lo Rabbana. And therefore, we can't understand the Mishnah. Is there another sheet that we're not aware of? Because, take a look at the, this is really a Mishnah, even though it says the Tanya. Take a look at the Mishnah in Ma'asrot. It says over there, Hamitameid v'natan mayim b'midah. So you measured the amount of liquid water that you put into the grape sediment container, and then you measure the amount of liquid that you have in the mixture, and it's exactly the same. The same amount of liquid comes out as the water that you put in. So there the Tanakhama says, you're putter. Because since the amount of added water is exactly the amount of water or liquid out, so then that would mean that the liquid is now nothing but flavored water, because there was no additional liquid of wine that was put into it. Whereas Rebbe Yehuda says, how does that prove anything? You would still be chayiv, because basically you're just exchanging an equal amount of liquid water for liquid wine that had been absorbed in the sediment. So you can't use that as an indication. So it apparently, certainly on the surface, the machlokas between Rebbe Yehuda and the Rabbanan takes into consideration only the question of how much liquid there is in the mixture and whether we have any proof that there was added wine to the mixture, right? That's something that our Mishnah ignores entirely. Furthermore, the machlokas between Rebbe Yehuda and the Rabbanan ignores the question of whether the temet had fermented or not. It doesn't matter. They don't mention fermentation. I don't know what Alon's going to be doing when he gets to the restaurant and orders temed. He's not going to know what brocha to make because he's not listening to the shir here. My gosh.
I'm sorry, Rebbe. I'm not best. My car broke down yesterday. Sorry, I'm not broken.
Oh, my gosh.
So I'm not in a best set of mind. Sorry.
Oh, no.
I'm now. Actually, I'm in transport trying to work that out and get too much.
Oh, my gosh. What a reduction in circumstances.
Guilty as charged.
As you know, what Naomi said when she came into Beit Lechem and they called her Naomi. She said, I'm not Naomi. I'm a totally different personality now. You try to call Alon Alon when he's outside of his what is it? It's not a Range Rover. What's the name of the car?
A Land Rover Defender.
Land Rover Defender.
And the only thing you defend, only you can defend that's it, being stuck on the side of the bloody road.
You will tell you, I'll take Renali Alon, Renali Cactus. Absolutely. Okay. So maybe the Adafioli will get you, put you back into shape. All right. Anyway, so here we've got a problem. Our Mishnah considers the only factor to be important about determining whether something is temet, that's wine, or temet, that's just plain flavored water, to be fermentation. And the only machlokas that we know of between Tanoim about it completely ignores fermentation and says the only thing you got to worry about is how much liquid comes out as opposed to how much liquid going in. So who's the Mishnah going according to? If it's going according to the Rabbanan didn't mention fermentation. The Rabbanan said even though it did ferment, it should still be considered water if it only has the same amount of liquid that was in it. But our Mishnah doesn't say that. Our Mishnah says if it ferments, then it is wine. You could buy it with kesef meiser, and it will not pass through your mikvah chaserah. And if it's going according to Rabbi Yehuda says, look, if you've got that water, you can assume that that water has been exchanged for wine content. And he doesn't say it needs to ferment. And therefore, the moment that you mix it with water, it should be considered to be wine. So the Mishnah's not going to anyone. What's going on here? Omer Rav Nachman, Omer Rabba Baravua. Actually, the Mishnah in Maisras is taking for granted that there was fermentation. And that was a given. Now the question was, even when it was fermented, if it only was the same amount of liquid, the Rabbanan would say it's still just water, so it's got a little bit of vinegary taste, that's all. Whereas Rabbi Yehuda said, it doesn't matter whether you get more water, all that's important is whether it fermented. So exactly what the Mishnah says, our Mishnah is going like Rabbi Yehuda in the Mishnah in Masras, and it's very, very simple. Because if the Machlokas in Masras is dafka taken for granted that it was Hichmitz, then our Mishnah that ignores anything but Hichmitz is exactly what Rabbi Yehuda said over there. V'chein omer Rabbi Yosi b'Rabbi Chanina, the Machlokas in Masechet Masrot is taken for granted that the fermentation took place. Now, Rav Nachman also said that Rabba Bar Avuha said that if you bought temet before it fermented with money of maaser, and when you bought it, it was just plain water, no fermentation, and then it ends up fermenting. Obviously, it takes time till it ferments, right? So you bought it while it was just water, and in the end, a week later, you discover that it has fermented. Then what has happened is that the original purchase of the Maaser Sheni actually worked. And therefore, the Kedusha of the Maaser is Chal on the Temet, and the money is Chulin in the hands of the seller. And it's as if he bought fermented Temet from the beginning. So in other words, what Nachman is saying is that if it is going to ferment, then actually it's clear that it was always wine. Because look, if you've got grape juice before it ferments, it's wine. I mean, you can't detect it through fermentation, but in this case, the eventual fermentation proves that it was actually grape all along, and that's why it fermented. So now it's retroactively it's retroactively clear that all along this was a real fruit product. But wait, Rav Nachman, the Mishnah says that you buy it and either it is Hichmitz or not. But how can the Mishnah say that? Maybe if you would have left it, it would have ultimately fermented, and therefore, if the Mishnah ignores that and says, only look at the situation currently, and it says, if you bought it with Maaser Sheni, the Kinyan is not Chal, and we're taking for granted that there's no Kedusha of Maaser on this Temet, how can it say that according to you? How do you know that if you would have left it around, how do you know that it wouldn't have fermented? So clearly the Mishnah does not agree with you that you can now retroactively define it as being Temet because it was going to ferment. Otherwise, how could it allow Meister Shaney something that might actually be Meister Shaney and just make a blanket statement? Nah, you don't have to worry about it. It's not Meister Shaney. That doesn't make sense. Omar Rabbah, the Mishnah is talking about a case where you put a little bit of this temet in a test tube and you left it in that test tube to see if it would ferment, and it did not. So therefore, the Mishnah says, okay, you know it didn't ferment, so then, Enoch Inami, you are absolutely certain that it wasn't the kinyan of Meister Shaney. That must be the case, because otherwise, how could Reb Nachman justify the Mishnah's ignoring the possibility that what you're looking at is a glass of what is going to become a fine, temed wine? Rava says, nah, it's very difficult to believe. Come on, a test tube. And I don't believe it. The Mishnah doesn't say anything about that. It must be that actually our Mishnah is a different Shita. Our Mishnah is going according to the famous Shita of Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri. So it's all very nice that Reb Nachman says that you can determine the state of the Temed ex post facto by seeing what happens. Now, that is definitely not like our Mishnah, says Rava, or says Rava, because our Mishnah says it just is a function of what it is at the time. You know why? That is because it's talking about the Shita of Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri. Let's take a look at that Shita from the Mishnah that we learned together in Mikvaot. So it says over there, Shlosha Lugin Mayim Choser Kurtav. Let's say you have slightly less than 3 lugin of mayim that fall into a mikveh that is chaser. Now, that wouldn't cause any problem with the mikveh. But in this case, the missing kurtav was taken up by a kurtav of wine that fell into the shlosha lugin. So now you have shlosha lugin of liquid, but not really shlosha lugin of liquid water, because you've got 1/64 of this is actually wine. Fine. It says here in the Mishnah, if it looks like wine, and that little bit of wine that fell in changed it into a color of wine, and then it falls in the mikveh, so then it doesn't passel it. If 3 lugin of mayim that were chaser kurtav, this time you've made up the missing kurtav of liquid by milk. Milk falls into. Now, it obviously does not look like anything but water if a little bit of milk falls into it. And then it looks like water. Makes no difference. If that falls into the mikveh, it does not pass it. Why? Because in neither case do we really have 3 lugin of water. I don't care what it looks like. It could look like wine. It could look like water. It either is water or isn't water. And in both of these cases, it's not water. That's what the Tanakhama says. But Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri says, not true. Everything goes according to the way we detect it. And in this case, we could detect it through the color. If it's the color of wine, then it's not water. And if it's the color of water, it is water. Therefore, I say, says Rava, didn't Rabbi Yochanan say that all that matters is the detectability? In that case, the way that it looks. Well, in our Mishnah, we would do the same thing if it was said by Rabbi Yochanan. And therefore, what Rabbi Yochanan would have said is, detect this temed. What is it? Yeah, it looks like water. It tastes like water, and therefore, it is water, according to me. But, it's going to ferment. I don't care what's going to be in the future. That's Reb Nachman Shita, but the Mishnah is going according to Reb Yochanan ben Nuri. So now everything works out, because our Mishnah that says it's the detectability that's important, that's true, but it's a different Tana, says Reb Nachman. But if you don't know the according to Reb Yochanan ben Nuri, then the ultimate fermentability of something is what's going to define it, not its actual current status of being fermented or not fermented. Okay, so now, according to Nachman, remember, he took for granted to answer the machlokas between Reb Yudin and the Chachamim in Maestras. He said that Mishnah was talking about where you bought temed that was already fermented. And the only question is whether you got out more liquid or the same amount of liquid, right? But the fermentation, that was a given. That's how Reb Nachman had answered the Mishnah. However, not everybody agrees that that is the way to understand the Mishnah in Maasrot. That argues with Rabbi Elazar. What Reb Nachman said is not the way that Rabbi Elazar understands it, because Rabbi Elazar says, look, let me tell you something. Even Rabbi Yehuda is Maida. You cannot take off from this temed. You can't take off from it on some other temed unless it already fermented. Well, I thought Reb Nachman said it had to have already fermented. Ah, well, obviously, Reb Elazar doesn't hold that. So what is Reb Elazar saying? If it's not fermented, you're still going to have to take off Meiser for itself. But if you've got two different temeds, one of them may be an ultimate fermenter, and the other one may turn out to be a dud. So how can you take off from one on the other? Either you'll be taking off, possibly, min hachiyuv al haptur, or you're going to be taking off min haptur al hachiyuv, both of which are disastrous, remember. Because if you take off min hachiyuv al haptur, then what it is that you took off is just plain tevel. Now the Levi's going to be taking it thinking it's Meiser, but it's not Meiser. And vice versa. If you took off from something that's Potter on something that's Chayev, what's left is Tevel. And then whoever eats it thinking that it's already been Meiser is going to be Chayev for eating Tevel. Therefore, you cannot take from one part on the other part, but what's important for us is the implication. Rebbe Lezer says it hasn't been Hichmitz yet. And the only time that you could rely on its being wine to take one from the other is if it was Hichmitz. Whereas according to Reb Nachman, it's a given that it was Hichmitz. That's the only way to understand the Mishnah. So now that means that according to Reb Elazar, he holds the machlokes between the Chachon and Reb Yehuda is where it was not Hichmitz. And even though Reb Yehuda said, you're going to have to take off Meisers, obviously he wasn't sure. So ad kam lo mechayev Reb Yehuda elamineu bei. All he meant was, you've got to take it off from this one, because it may actually be a real temet, or it might be a dud temet. So if you've got two, you have no way of knowing. And therefore, each one of them might be the real thing, but you can't separate from one on the other. Avo mi amalo, dioma ati li efrushe, min achiyuv al haptur. We don't want you coming to be machil levim tevel, or to be machil the poor people who thought they've got this tevel all taken care of. You can't feed them tevel either. Now, I'm assuming that hand up on a movil is a real hand, even though the movil himself has disappeared. Hard to believe. I mean, that would be like saying just because you found extra water, you're going to be sure that it's going to be fermented in the end. Unlikely. So therefore, let's continue. Now, there's another big difference between temed and if it has been wine or not. And that is, remember, water that's tameh can be made tahor. And how would you do that? You would just let it touch a mikveh that's called hashaka, and then the water essentially becomes part of the mikveh, and now the water is tahor. But anything else that's not just water cannot become part of the mikveh. So therefore, if this temed is wine, you're not going to be able to be metayer it. And if this temed is water, you will be able to be metayer it. So therefore, the machlokas that we've had until now also would have other applications. It's got to be tumah v'tayer. And in fact, there's a braita that makes that clear. Tana rabbana. Hatemed ad shelo ichmitz. If it didn't turn into wine yet, it hasn't fermented, then it's just water. And if it's tamei, you can touch it to a mikvah, mashiko, b'mayim, and it will become tahor. But once it turns into temed, meaning fermented temed, you can no longer be metayer it by touching it to water, because you cannot put a Coke bottle in there and make it kosher with the Coke. It's only if it's water. And this is wine, not water. And therefore, you cannot be mashikid b'mayim. Omar Rava, well, I wouldn't say that that's always the case, you know? It depends. If you poured in water that's tar, and then before it fermented, it became tummy, then yes, that is true. You can be metayer that water that became tummy after mixing. But if the water that you poured in initially was tummy, then you cannot actually be mashikit, because it's once it was a temed, so now it's a mixture. And that mixture, if the water was tar, it's true, had still a din of water. But if you poured in actual tummy water, then you cannot be metaira through hashaka. So Rav Gavir Mibekatil, he said that over to what Rava said. It didn't make any sense to him. And he said it over to Rav Ashi and pointed out, what the heck is the difference? What would be the reason, only possible reason that I can imagine, for saying that water that's tummy in the first place cannot be tohar through hashaka just because it's mixed with this temed, which itself is just water so far? Why is it a problem? I'll tell you why. Because it's got to be that water is heavier than temed. That's the problem. So the temed has all types of other liquids in it, and its specific density is lower than water, and therefore it floats on top of water. So if the tummy water was poured in, and now you touch the top of the temed to a mikveh, it doesn't come into contact with the water, it only comes into contact with the temed. That must be the reason. I mean, it makes no sense otherwise. So it must be the amrinan. It must be because we say that Aide de Maya Yakire, since water is heavier than tamid, shach de tatoi, so the water settles to the bottom, and therefore the fruit content water, pera, is kafi mila el, so that goes, starts floating on the top. And if you touch the top to a mikveh, then lokasaka lo ashaka lo maya. That's why it doesn't help, because you never touch the tummy water. But if that's the case, the same thing would be true if it was tar water in the first place, and in the end it became tummy. It's also going to sink to the bottom. I mean, the tumah has no effect on the specific density, you know? So why does Rava say that you can be mashikit in the case that it was tar in the first place? Because he understands that it certainly is mixed. It's homogenized, so it's mibalbele. So achanami mibalbele. So what's the difference? It would be mibalbele in either case, and therefore Rava saying does not make sense. And either way, you should be able to do a perfectly valid hashaka on the water that had been mekabel tuma, whether it was mekabel tuma subsequently or prior to its mixing. Okay, so now we've examined these two cases so far of different stages. One was in terms of temed prior and post chimutz, and the other was heirs of a father's estate and the difference between breaking up the estate and before breaking up the estate. That was nogea, the kalabon and the chiyuvim of Maiser Behima. We're getting up to some new examinations of different stages of a single thing, but not before Sir Richard, who no longer apparently is right. I don't know whether that means he's wrong. It could be that there is some status in between. Maybe he's neither left nor right, nor right or wrong, but he's just in a perpetual state of a certain richy state of mind, which is always not quite certain. This is one of the famous quantum states. It's called Richard Uncertainty. But before we get to him, let us move on to Sir Handy.
So, chimut is only a mile after tamid, right? For yayin, it's like a degeneration of it.
It's not because it's a problem. It's because yayin, shehichmitz, means that it fermented beyond the stage of yayin. And temet shehichmitz means it fermented to wine. So we're just using the stages differently anyway. But it's not really that the yichmitz is a problem. All right, we're ready now. for the leadership, assuming he hasn't fallen asleep. You remember what happened to the Baal? Good heavens. They were yelling their heads off, and there was absolutely no response from the Baal. Now, we wouldn't think that Sir Richard fell asleep, would we? And is simply not hearing his cues. But you never know. It's possible. But look at this. Look how this works. Hey, Doc! Now, this might mean that Richie's is worse than asleep. We should send an ambulance. But go ahead, Doc. Give us the Mishnah.
So, the Heilige Mishnah.
Oh, Richie, you'll never live this down. You're too late. Okay, so let's take a look at our next stages. And this is the stage in the life of a young Bas Yisrael. Now, you will recall that there is a halacha that a father is allowed to sell his daughter who's a ketana. You will also remember that there's a halacha that in the event that a young girl is raped, then there is a knas of 50 shekel, and that goes to the father also. Now, our Mishnah claims, and it is one shita, as we'll see, that if the father can sell that daughter, then she's too young to have a knas, ein knas. And any place where there is a knas, that's because the Torah talks about a na'ara. When it talks about knas, well, a nara is already pubescent, and therefore it's too late for the father to sell her because the child goes out of the status of a shivcha the moment that she actually becomes pubescent. So simonim take her out, and if they take her out, obviously he can't sell her after she's already reached that age. So therefore, we can put it very succinctly: kol makom sheyesh mecher, if she can be sold, meaning she's a ketana, ain't knas, because she's not a nara. V'chol makom sheyesh knas, where she is a nara, by definition ain't mecher, because she's not a ketana and she was already maybe simani. Seems very straightforward. However, as Rabbi Yehuda Marav points out, this is only true according to Rabbi Meir. But the Chachamim disagree. The Chachamim say it's not so. The din of a knas, even though it mentions the na'ara, you'll notice that when it says avia na'ara, it says it as if there's a hay, but there's no hay. It's spelled nun ayin resh na'ar instead of na'ara. Now, an undeveloped prepubescent girl might as well be a boy. And therefore, we don't distinguish between the na'ar and the na'ara as a ketana. And that's the raya, that even though it talks about a na'ara, say the Chachamim, it really means a ketana as well. And therefore, a ketana also, if she's raped, you'd have to pay 50 shekel. However, that doesn't mean there's no age limit, because it's only a din in her being raped. You cannot rape someone who doesn't have genitals, and since she doesn't have genitals been sad the din until she's 3 years old, she cannot be raped, and therefore there would be no knas. So what it really means is there is a certain stage, meaning from the age of 3 until the time that she becomes a nara, where even though you can sell her, there would be knas. You can sell her less than 3 years of age, but there's no mixture of the right to sell and the right to knas, except between the ages of 3 and puberty. So the Chachamim amru, yesh knas, sometimes, even b'makom mecher. And where's this machlokas between Rabbi Meir and the Chachamim? The Tanya. Kitana mibat yom echad ad shetavish tei sarot yesh lamecher. A child from the day that she's born until she becomes pubescent is able to be sold by her ever-loving daddy. But ein la knas, there is no fine that goes to the father if she was raped. But from the time that she reaches puberty, until she is a na'ara, yesh la knas, ve'en la mecher, there she will give the knas if she's raped, but she can't be sold. This is Rabbi Meir Shita. Shehaya Rabbi Meir Omer, it's Rabbi Meir who stated our Mishnah. Kol makom sheyesh mecher ein knas, v'chol makom sheyesh knas ein mecher. But the Chachamim disagree. Ketana mibat shalosh shanim v'yom echad, as long as she has genitals. Then, from the age of 3, Ad Shetivgar, she does have knas. Only knas? Knas in? She can't be sold? That's crazy. No, of course not. Come on, stop being stupid. Af knas b'mokam mecher. She also would have knas, even though the father can't sell her. So that's not true what Rebbe Meir said, that these different stages, according to the Chachomim, different stages are juxtaposed as mirror images. They are not mirror images. That's the sheet of the Chachomim. Which brings us to one other approach, to our dear Capitan, who seems to have actually fallen into the porridge. Oh my gosh. Mommy, someone ate my porridge and they're still there. It's no good. Doc, you're on again.
So, the Halakha Mishnah.
You better start practicing for an end of a parak at this rate. We're going to need some very solid song there. Next case. Kol makom sheyesh mi'un ein chalitza, v'chol makom sheyesh chalitza, ein mi'un. So now we've got also another way to juxtapose the two stages in life. Remember that the Chachamim created the concept of a marriage for a ketana. They did this in order to protect her from predators. So therefore, if she has a marriage of sorts, her husband, even though it's only derabonan, but her husband will protect her in this derabonan marriage. However, what if the husband is a predator? Good Lord. So what do we do then? So this marriage, actually, she can simply walk out of by saying, I don't like him. And that's called miun. So together with the marriage for a katana, they created a way out. So as long as this girl can still be mima'enet, so then that means that she is a katana. But by the same token, ein chalitza, since the Torah specifies ish, which means he has to be mature, the yovam has to be mature, so we have a gezerah shova, a hekesh rather, of isha le'ish. And therefore, there would not be possible for her, if she's able to be mema'enes as a katana, she wouldn't be able to do chalitza in the event that it was a deraisa marriage. Where is there a deraisa marriage for a katana if the father married her off, right? So there she could fall to yibam mideraisa, and she's too young to do chalitza.
And then she'd be chayavet in yibam?
Yeah. I mean, until she grows up. I mean, if she grows up, she could do chalitza, but... V'chol makom sheyesh chalitza, but where there is chalitza, which means that she is a nara already, so she's mature, then ein miyun. There's no longer an ability to walk out of a marriage. So now, it's again, Om Rav Yonah Marav, again, this is a Rebbe Meir Mishnah. The Chachamim would not agree with this juxtaposition, because it's Rebbe Meir who says that a nara is, by definition, unable to be mima enet. Aval chachamim omrim, there are situations where there can be the right of refusal, which is miun, even in a situation where she would be able to do chalitza. Why? This is the machlokes, the Tanya. Ad matay habat mima enet, how long can a girl who was married min rabbanan cancel that marriage? So indeed, according to Rabbi Meir, the moment that she reaches puberty, she can no longer be mema'enet. Okay, that was what the Mishnah was based on. But Rabbi Yehuda says, no, she's got to be older than that. It's only at a time where she has, all the way up to the time where she has pubic hairs, but not enough to make the genitals look dark. So there's just the same shtei sarot, which according to Rabbi Meir would actually be the end of this stage of the miyun. And according to Rabbi Yehuda, it continues later after actual technical puberty. Now, let's talk about our next, Sir Richard, head out of the porridge. Maybe it was Temet. Maybe he thought it was just Mayim, and then it started to ferment after he drank it, and he didn't realize that he was going to be knocked out by just water. That's possible.
Not possible, Rabbi. You can't mistake that until I tell you.
How are you?
Didn't want to get a ticket by a cop.
How are you driving with your? How are you driving with your head in a porridge bowl?
There must be a problem there. I'm on my way to the U.S. Embassy with my wife's caregiver to try to get a visa for her to come to America, where we're going to on Monday.
Well, listen here, Sir Richard. You got enough protection to flatten the whole country. You shouldn't have any problem whatsoever.
It depends when my source of protection isn't busy with so many other balls in the air that he's juggling. I don't want to threaten the national security because of my petty needs. Anyway, what am I supposed to say? I'll say it quickly because I'm stopped at the side of the road. Okay. Where are we? We're at
a Mishnah, and Doc has filled your role twice, and now this is your third opportunity. Now you can say the Mishnah. Introduce the Mishnah.
Good. I'll do it. Then I'm going to have to get on with my test.
Okay, but that means. Lovely, but you know what that means, Sir Richard? It means Doc gets to do the end of the parak.
Well, what has to be. I call it a vote to Doc, but I'm in a narrow place. A cop just passed me, and I better get moving.
Get moving carefully. Okay, Sir Richard, take care of yourself. Okay, so our next Mishnah is going to contrast our week. How do you like that? We just had a Yontiv that fell right before a Shabbos. So now the question is, do you make Havdolah after that Yontiv? And the answer is, absolutely not. Because when you go from Yontiv to Shabbos, you actually are going into a greater Kedusha, and therefore you don't make Havdolah. But now the question is, do you run the typical Tekiot, which introduce to people that Shabbos is about to come, drop what you're doing, which will be usher on Shabbos? Do we do that only on Chol, on a regular Friday, or would we do it on Yontav, even though it's Friday? We would do it on Yontav to prevent Chilul Shabbat, and we would blow our tekiah. And therefore, if there is a tekiah, so that means it's exactly like our past weekend, that the Chag was actually immediately before Shabbos, and then there's going to be a tekiah when Shabbos begins, then you don't say Havdolah because you're going from a Kedushas Yontav to Kedushas Shabbos. But Komokom Sheyesh Havdolah, if you've made Havdolah, it means that between...
I'm going to try going up here, but I have a feeling...
I think you are needed in muting. So in the case where you actually do make a Havdolah, that means that it was after Shabbos, then there's no tekiah because you're going down in the level of Isser. So here's the deal. If Yontav came out on Erev Shabbos, so then the first part of the Mishnah that says if there's a tekiah, there's no Havdolah. So if it turned out that way, then you only do the tekiah before Shabbos to make sure people don't do the same thing they're doing now. They've been cooking all day. They might think they can continue to cook. We blow the shofar. But if it was the other way around, b'motzei Shabbat, if Yontif comes out on this Sunday, then we do say Havdolah after Shabbat, v'lo toki. But what kind of Havdolah would you say? I mean, you can't say Amavdo ben Kodesh l'chol, can you? I mean, if Motzei Shabbos and it's now Yontif, are you going to call Yontif chol? So what do you say? Well, says the Tanakhama, you say, Hamavdil ben Kodesh l'Kodesh. Rabbi Dosa says, you say, Hamavdil ben Kodesh chamur l'Kodesh hakal, which the Chachamim don't appreciate because you don't call a Yontav a Kodesh hakal. What an insult, my goodness. So now the question is, How do you do the Tekiah Shofar on the Yontem that comes out on an Erev Shabbos? It's obviously not the same blast, is it? Because when you're coming in from Friday into Shabbos, that's a blast, man, because everything that was mutter is now usher. But over here, it's only sort of a semi-blast, because anyway, a lot of things were usher on Yontev, and now you're screwing things up tighter, so you want to make it clear that this is a Yontev to Shabbos semi-blast rather than a regular blast. So how do we make that distinction? With a tekiah at the end of a Shavuos that comes out on an Erev Shabbos. Sounds familiar. Omar Rabbi Yehuda, tokea umeiria mitoch tekiah. You don't do the normal tekiah and true and so on. You do a tekiah, and the tekiah then turns into a trua. So you don't make any distinction by stopping for a moment between your tekiah and your trua. Rabbi Asi says, no, it's not quite like that. You do stop between them, but you don't take a breath. Now, you'll notice that these are different ways that we do the tekiahs also on Rosh Hashanah. So you're tokea umeiria b'neshima achat, but there's certainly a break between the tekiah and the trua. And Rabbi Asi, actually, who holds that, he made that the norm in Hutzal, where he was boss, and he was mitaken in Hutzal according to his own shita, and he made that the minhag halacha l'maaseh. The problem is that both Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Asi seem to be wrong according to the following brisa. Meisvet, Yom Tov Shechal Lihiyot Be'erev Shabbat, which was exactly what happened to us a few days ago, Tok'in V'lo Meriim. Here it says you only say a tekiah, you don't do a trua, which is mashma, lo meri'in klal, right? No, I mean, it means no meri'in normally. Rabbi Yehuda would explain that according to his approach. Rabbi Asi would explain it according to his approach. Rabbi Yehuda would say, the time, it means we don't do the standard trua as a separate sound. We go into the trua directly without a break from the tekiah. And Rabbi Asi would say what it means is, lo meri'in mishtei nishimot. We don't take two separate breaths for the two separate tones, but rather b'neshima achat. So it really doesn't have anything to do with the our shitas. Now, the Mishnah says, on Mitzvah Shabbos, you say Hamavdil ben Kodesh l'Kodesh. But where do you say Hamavdil ben Kodesh l'Kodesh? Do you say that only at the end? Hamavdil ben Kodesh l'Kodesh. Or do we say Hamavdil ben Kodesh l'Kodesh ben, and so on, at the beginning? Where is this ben Kodesh l'Kodesh? Anyway, don't drink too much of that temed, Alon. You don't realize what effect it might have on your driving later. So where do you say this? Eicha Omerle. At the top of the Avdolah or at the bottom of the Avdolah? Omer of Yudah, only in the Chatima. Amavdiel ben Kodesh l'Kodesh. V'chein Omer of Nachman, only at the end. B'chatimata. Reb Sheshes Bereda Ravidi says, no, you also say it at the beginning. So you start off by saying, Amavdil ben Kodesh l'Kodesh ben Or l'Chayshech, and so on. And then you close also with Amavdil ben Kodesh l'Kodesh. But we don't paskin like him. And the reason that we don't paskin like him is because, remember, the list at the beginning of the list has nothing to do with the particular circumstances of the situation. We'll make the same Avdolah. If we're talking about Mitzvah Yontev, we're going to make the same Avdolah, right? It'll be Ben Yom HaShvi'i L'Sheshi Simei HaMaaseh. I mean, why are we doing that? Because all we're doing is, as the Gemara explained elsewhere, we're listing the Avdolahs in the Torah. We're not referring to this particular case. And therefore, the Avdolahs in the Torah are Amavdil Mikodesh L'Chol and so on. And therefore, it doesn't make sense to change, as Reb Sheshes claims, that we should change the beginning, because the beginning is the standard beginning under all circumstances. Now, the last thing that we heard was Rabbi Dosa Shita, and Rabbi Dosa said, Ben Kodesh Chamur L'Kodesh HaKal. Well, we definitely don't paskin like that, and it's because it's calling Yontev a Kodesh HaKal. What an insult. Omar Rebbe Zeir, a yontov that is chal liyot b'motzei Shabbat, omer hamavdil ben kodesh l'chol. So now you start with the regular ben or l'choshech, ben Yisrael amim, ben yom hashvi'i l'sheshit v'yamatz. Now, why are we talking about Shabbos if it's here we're talking about the sheshes yimei ha'maaseh, if this is not sheshes yimei ha'maaseh? I mean, it's actually a yontev. So why do we say that? Because, obviously, Seder Havdalot u'moneh, all we're listing is the number of different Havdalas that are mentioned in the Torah, and it has nothing to do with this occasion. It's only the closing. That's why we actually would never entertain doing the beginning of it like that, as we paskin before. Get ready, Doc. Take a couple of deep breaths. We're ready to go. Hadralach HaKol Sheichatim. Wow, that was good. Keep going, man. You're on a roll. Frankton, go ahead. Give us the whole jazz.
Frankton the Helika Perek.
Wow. Okay, so now we get to the second perek, which is the perek that tells us how to do shechita, what the dinim are of that shechita, and so on in detail. Hashochet echad ba'of u'shnayim b'beima shechita tokesheira. As we've learned already before, you need to cut both the kona and veshet in a mammal, and either the kona and the veshet, or the veshet in a bird, unless we're talking about the oilas ha'of, where over there we have a separate mitzvah of havdalah, but it's not an actual din in shechita. Well, we'll go all over that, Bezrat Hashem, tomorrow, and looking forward to seeing you then after another happy day. We still have a handy hand. He didn't take his hand down. Now, he might want us to address the handy hand, or he might just want to wave goodbye. Remember, Richie's driving, and he can't do his normal goodbye, so maybe that's all you're interested in.
Well, I was wondering if Rabbi Dosa was referencing the idea of Kachin Kali, the Kachin Kodesh Kali, as opposed to Kachin Kachin.
That's interesting. We do have such a concept, and we don't consider it to be embarrassing to the Shlomim to call it Kachim Kalim. So why would we consider it to be embarrassing for the Yontev?
Plus, the Shlomim has a chelik for the Baalim. This is Yom Tov. It's
Lachem. Same thing. It's Lachem. Very good point. Maybe we should re-examine this Shita and not cast it off so casually. Excellent. Okay. See you, Bezrat Hashem, tomorrow.